Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with photographers Douglas Boz and Charles H. Traub, creators of Cajun Document, Acadiana 1973-74. It's a great pleasure to welcome photographers Douglas Boz and Charles H. Traub to The Reading Life. Today we're talking about their beautiful book, Cajun Document, Acadiana 1973-74, which accompanies an exhibition at the Historic New Orleans Collection. Doug is a freelance photographer who works in New York's Hudson Valley and is the founder of the program in fine art photography at Bard College. Charles Traub is the chair and founder of the MFA program in photography, video, and related media at the School of Visual Arts in New York City. The work we're talking about goes back to their early days, which luckily for us took the form of a project in Louisiana. Welcome to The Reading Life, Charles.
Happy to be here.
Welcome, Doug.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us, and we certainly appreciate your interest in our book, in our exhibition and work.
Well, tell us about this initial journey. It sounds like the ultimate road trip for two buddies. You're having a winter break from Chicago, from the Illinois Institute of Technology, and you head south along the River Road.
Exactly. In fact, I think road trips were in the air, you know, around that time in the 60s and 70s. But for us, it was really a way to get away from the bitter cold of a Chicago winter. And because we were both teaching photography at a school in Chicago called Columbia College, we would have the winter, a month or so, month and a half off between semesters. And so we would often flee Chicago and head south just to photograph and get away from the cold. And this particular time, I did as a destination to follow the Mississippi River Road. And that seemed like a good enough hook for us. So that's exactly what we did. And just started driving south, stopping whenever, wherever we wanted to, following our noses, so to speak, and our eyes.
This is Charles. Of course, the Great River Road is a very interesting road, full of history, full of all the traumas of America, but also great things about it, and the gateway to the South. And it was just a wonderful journey. As I remember that, you know, we could feel each time we got a little bit further each day, the weather got better. If you know Chicago in February, you can imagine.
Right. I've been in Chicago in February. It's time to head out.
Get the hell out. But all of a sudden, we were in a whole different landscape. We were in something that neither one of us, I think, expected. I mean, I had always heard about the Bayou Country and the marshes of Louisiana, and perhaps we knew the word Cajun. I'm not even sure about that at this point in my life. And we were in a restaurant, and somebody said, well, you like your landscape photographers, I guess we got to talk to him. And we went across into the Chafalaya on I-10. And all of a sudden, we were in a landscape that was totally alien to us, but exciting and beautiful and mysterious, if you will, and found ourselves among people who were speaking a patois, but a totally alien language for us. And so what is this? Where are we? And you know, I guess we were inquisitive, we were intelligent and wanting to know, and we interviewed people and talked to people and started making pictures. And they were the kind of pictures, I think, of a landscape that we had never photographed, though both of us had been landscape photographers to some extent. We were using big cameras, a 4x5 view cameras at that time exclusively, and we made some wonderful pictures and found out here's a culture that exists on the land, which is something other than perhaps being in farmland in central Illinois, where I have roots. Mm-hmm. I never quite understood people hunting, fishing, trapping, but also farming in a different way, whose total culture revolved around what the landscape could produce. That was just a wonderful experience. We were out in the open with fresh air. People were hospitable and engaging in every way.
One of the things that's so interesting to me is that watery landscape is so very different.
It is so very different. Of course, I'm from Kentucky, but from Louisville. So I'm basically a city boy and spent my graduate years in Chicago and never really was what one would call an outdoorsman. And we all, Doug was a little more, he lived on Long Island. He did some fishing as a young man. But yes, that was like an escape into another world, into another lifestyle, where we were also, frankly, away from the academic rigor and competition and big city life and all those things, enjoying people who were working but playing very hard, by the way, and mixing work and play in a very positive way because of the bounty that they were able to harvest or able to make. And the family relationships, of course, were very strong, and they were people. Everybody was networked in some way. You know, oh, you've got to go see Mr. Thibodeau down a few miles. He's a chicken farmer, blah, blah, blah. And he's my first cousin, so just tell him I sent you. That was pretty much the character, not only of the first trip, but of the whole time we were down there the second year.
One of the things that struck me about this whole book is that it's such a classic American journey to travel the River Road, to go out in the countryside. You know, there are pictures of boys in this book that are like straight out of Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer.
Yep.
The boy with his 22 in the woods, the boy in the boat with the snake, the kids fishing with their mom.
Everything involved family and extended family, it seemed to us, and we always found that out. I mean, certainly everybody seemed to know everybody who was really part of the Cajun culture. You know, somebody said, you know, my aunt's having a display of her quilts. You go over there and look at them, you know. Or, you know, we're having a boucherie at St. Martinsville. You know what a boucherie is? No, we didn't. We found out, though.
And you have the pictures to prove it. I mean,
you know, it was a social event. I mean, people gathered. There was music. It was a big event, actually, you know, related and connected people in that community.
This is Doug. Well, you know, I think at the time when we did these photographs, I was 30, and Charles, I think, was 29. So we weren't that far removed from adolescence. And once again, I think we were amazed to see the connection that these young people, this is how they entertained themselves. It's what they had. They had the land.
And they had their families. And you have many, many family portraits that are wonderful. How did you persuade people to let you photograph them, or were they forthcoming?
Well, in the 1970s, people were not as afraid and suspicious of someone with a camera as they are now. And also, we weren't being surreptitious in any way, shape, or form. We were using large format cameras, for example, the 4x5, that looked like a 19th century camera. And I think people could sense our enthusiasm for their way of life and our real interest in who they were as people. So I think they were very open. Everyone was very open to being photographed because we were celebrating their way of life and they knew it.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with photographers Douglas Boz and Charles H. Traub, creators of Cajun Document, Acadiana, 1973-74. So is there a day of photographing that stands out for you, one memorable experience? I'm curious.
This is Charles speaking. Well, certainly, I guess the Corrida de Mardi Gras was the most extended day. It started like 5 in the morning, I believe. We were there, had driven over, and you know, it went into the night because they have this big gumbo at night and the dance and all of that. So that was a very extended, powerful day. But I think also it was a day when we went out on the oyster boat with oyster fishermen out of Morgan City, I think it was. And they just took us under their wing, and we ate oysters all day long. All day long. We ate all kinds of oysters, you know, Bienville, Rockefeller, raw, fried. They just kept making them. It was just unbelievable, you know, the bounty that so fresh, and these boats were loaded up. It was a long day, too, as I remember, but that was very, very impressive. Then there were times when we just stopped and met somebody. There's a picture of a black woman who's part of that tribe, and I remember her posing, just looking in the camera, what do you want me to do? And I take her picture and inviting us into her little house. There's two pictures, she and her grandchild and coming out the door of the house. I just remember, you know, very simple lifestyle, probably to some degree of poverty, but not abject poverty, just dignified in every way. And I'll never forget photographing her.
Wow.
And her knowledge of the land and all the things that she related to us.
They had so many things to show you with pride, like a family quilt that a person had made, or a birdhouse that someone had built.
Right, exactly, exactly. Or a decoy that someone
yes.
had made. Yes. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that they were very pleased that someone was taking an interest in them and in their culture. And as you undoubtedly know, we happened to be there at a time when I think I would say it was at the beginning of a revival of interest in preserving that culture. I think we were there on the cusp of change in their culture and in society at large, and we just happened to be there at the right time.
None of that's posed, by the way. That's just what they did. I mean, if somebody held up a quilt,
that's what they were doing.
Real people doing their work and showing their pride, as you just said.
And what moments you captured. I mean, to me, there's so many great photographs in this book, but to me, the one that speaks most eloquently to that spirit is that photograph of Edwin Broussard dancing at La Poussière in Brobridge, which looks like
right.
pure joy.
Yeah. I remember being fascinated by the Saturday night dances because we would always be in a bare bones room
yep.
with live musicians. But the people who came were of three generations. They'd be grandparents, parents, and children, all having a great time all at the same time. And I had never experienced that at all. And so, again, you know, I thought that this was, it just seemed like such a wonderful and solid way of life.
And probably a wood floor and the whole place was shaken.
Exactly. Without a doubt, a plain wooden floor. Yes.
And another thing that strikes me is that so much of this book shows us pride in work. That wonderful picture of Paul Dufresne Sr. holding a loaf of bread.
Mm-hmm.
If you describe that a little bit.
Well, as you say, he was the baker and a baker in the town. And I believe I remember that his bread was well known in mm-hmm. the town. So I think to talk about that picture, I think it helps to understand the way Charles and I were trained. We both had been in graduate school in Chicago at a place called the Institute of Design. The Institute of Design was a school of architecture, photography, and design that had come out of the Bauhaus in Germany. When Hitler came into power in Germany, he disbanded the Bauhaus school, which was a famous design architecture school in Germany. And the head of the Institute of the Bauhaus, Moholy Nagy, came to this country and looked for an institution to connect himself with and to start up again. And he ended up in Chicago. Well, we went to that school, and we had, at the time, we had a a professor who taught the history of photography at the time. It was one of the first courses in the history of photography in the country. So we were very well aware of very important figures, such as August Sander, mm-hmm. who documented the people of Germany in the 1920s and the 30s. And he was well known, for example, for what became known as an occupational portrait. And I would say that that picture was a direct response to our understanding of August Sander's work.
One of the odd things that this brought home to me, I hadn't really thought about this much until I looked at these photographs, is how important horses were to this way of life. You photographed the trail rides along the levee, the Coureur du Mardi Gras on horseback, of course, and the Karen Crow Raceway. So which one of you is the horse photographer?
Neither, but now both of us are.
So you were taken in by the trail rides and the races. And
yeah, I think it was the trail rides that first really caught our attention, because it was a common way for people to socialize for a weekend, going on those trail rides along the river, the levee road, and camping overnight, dancing, listening to music, and just having a good time, as Cajuns know how to do.
Charles here. It was a natural part of that lifestyle. I know how to ride a horse, or I guess we both did, but I'm not a horse person. And those were social events that brought everybody together. I understand that these rides where the people come together to go on a trail ride still exist, still do that. Certainly the Mardi Gras Mamou still exists. What we saw probably was at the end of its really kind of natural neighborhood, family town event. It had become more of a spectacle, I think, through the years, from what I understand.
As people have come to watch, yeah.
It seemed natural. I mean, we had to get involved. And, you know, I remember we were on a horse on the trail ride, and then we'd get off, and, you know, we were also a little bit on during the Mardi Gras career, though it was hard to photograph, obviously, from a horse. But we didn't have our own horse. Somebody just put us up on it.
So what's the best thing you ate? Was it those oysters?
Well, in Roe Bridge, there was a restaurant. I don't think it was Mama Tebow's, because that was a big restaurant. They were down the street. A little kind of diner, almost, not a formal diner. And every morning she would cook eggs with etouffee on them, crawfish etouffee, to the point that I think we were too rich, but it was a wonderful combination. She would just pour the etouffee over the fried eggs like gravy.
Oh, you're making me hungry.
I know, fresh as it could be, and I think she had biscuits too. And we ate there almost every morning that we were in Bow Bridge, at any rate. We feasted. I mean, we had everything imaginable. There was a duck gumbo, wild duck gumbo, served at a skeet range that we photographed. I'll never forget that gumbo, made from wild, recently shot duck, and sausage, and as fresh as it could be. We had so many meals like that, with people that basically just met us and invited us over to do this or that.
Welcome back. I'm talking with photographers Douglas Boz and Charles H. Traub, creators of Cajun Document, Acadiana, 1973-74. One of the things I admire about this book is the way it takes you on this journey. It starts with those aerial views. You move through the water to the people on the landscape, back to the water, And that last photograph, which I think is so beautiful, is of the marshes, which has such an elegiac quality. You know, it is so endangered, and it is so beautiful. And you got to see it in that marshland in a particular way.
This is Charles speaking. I think we understood intuitively, conscious or unconscious, that the landscape was what brought this all together. And of course, we did do a lot of research between the first trip and the second trip. We were really taken with how the landscape was used and how at the same time it was so natural and basically unspoiled except for some of the oil canals that they dug. But we didn't see that culture, which also helped feed the Cajun culture because there were a lot of people working in the oil industry even then. We didn't see it as a threat, so to speak, though I'm sure people were talking about it in that way. I want to talk a little bit about the book design because I've done a number of books. You can work with a designer who just wants to do it their way, or you can have your way and acquiesce. And then the curator, of course, John Lawrence, is the other voice. And like the experience of being in Cajun Louisiana, in Louisiana, everybody worked together beautifully. I mean, we'd come up with an idea. They said, let's try this. I remember she was talking about the end pages. I said, well, let's put the arrows on the end pages. And she said, yeah, we'll drop them out, which was a good idea because it subtly gets you into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think the story you're talking about that unfolds in the book is a product of collaboration from some very willing and very creative people all working together. We talked a lot about that and responded, but also added her own sense of what needed to come where. And it was out of good discussion and the four of us, John Lawrence and her and Doug and I. And that speaks to something that's hard to get yet, you know, where you have a collaboration of something where you get a synergism, you know, something more than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened.
This is Doug. Now that the exhibition is mounted and open and the book is printed and we've had a little time to step back and look at the images and think about the project of 45 years ago, we realized that the pictures to us take on an additional meaning now than they originally did. You know, I think originally, as we talked about, we were interested in documenting this amazing culture. But now I think the pictures as well represent a kind of a marker or a point in time against which to kind of measure climate change as well as cultural change in our country. And I think the climate change aspect of it is really it's become something that we become very interested in thinking about in relation to the pictures.
Oh, yes.
I think that at the time, you know, we found the people in Cajun parishes in kind of an equilibrium. I think they were in a balanced equilibrium with the nature surrounding them. And now things seem to have, you know, with climate change, which wasn't really spoken about at all during that time, the relationship of people to the environment has changed greatly. So to that end, we're actually doing a lecture that's part of this School of Visual Arts lecture series in New York to discuss this very subject. And we've asked a Times-Picayune environmental reporter, Tristan Barrick, to join us in that, which will be a virtual lecture on November 17th. He was part of an incredible article, long article, in the New York Times in February 2018, in collaboration with two environmental journalists at the New York Times, which is updated discussion of what has happened to the landscape since we've been there. So I look forward to that, and we hope that as many people, in general, we hope that as many people from the Cajun parishes come and see the exhibit or at least see the book and perhaps take part in this lecture that's going to take place.
Well, you really feel like you've been on a journey when you look through this book. It's a really lovely way to put it together. We've been talking with photographers Douglas Baz and Charles Traub, whose new book is Cajun Document, Acadiana 1973-74, which accompanies the exhibit at the Historic New Orleans Collection. It's on view until January 15th, 2021. Go to hnoc.org for more information. Charles, Doug, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Because this interview was pre-recorded, that talk has already taken place. But to hear that talk among Doug and Charles and Tristan Bowrick, you can find a link at wwno.org on the Reading Life page. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Poetry Buffet presents Peter Cooley, Nicole Cooley, Malaika Favorite, and Cheryl St. Germain in a virtual reading Saturday, December 5th at 2 p.m. Check out the Facebook page for information. And just a reminder that the photographs in Cajun Document, Acadiana 1973-74, will be on display at the Historic New Orleans Collection, 520 Royal Street, until January 17th. Free but reserved tickets at hnoc.org. Support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, and the Hillis Foundation. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.